Welcome to the Cincinnati Art Museum. You have signed up for the guided tour. We have a nice group here today, so let's get started.
Question.
Yes, sir. The gentleman wearing his hat indoors.
Will we see the John Singer Sargent painting Italian Girl with Fan?
Yes, that's on the second floor.
Can we see that first? I'm awfully excited.
We'll get there, I assure you. I see our Italian girl with Fan has at least two fans.
She must be hot.
She's attractive, for sure. I was referring to this gentleman's enthusiasm.
Can you blame him? Super attractive Italian girl.
Let's begin, shall we?
Question.
What is it?
Some museums have scavenger hunts. Y'all have that?
Usually that's for children.
Well, heck, I bet I can find tons of children. There's one right there.
That's actually our assistant curator, Mr. Sulkis.
I bet when he grows up, he'll be head curator.
Let's begin, shall we, if there's no more questions.
Question.
Yes?
Where are the mummies?
There are no mummies here. We have paintings and sculptures and ceramics. You are thinking of the mummy exhibit at the other museum.
So we won't be gazing into the faces of the dead?
Many of the subjects of our paintings are long dead, so in a way, yes, but no human remains.
I heard in previous centuries they used ground-up mummy in paint. So maybe they are in one of the paintings.
I have no idea. Can we begin? Why are all these chairs being set up? There is a wedding here this evening.
A wedding? Is this a church?
No, it's a museum. Then why is there a wedding here? Some people enjoy the elegant surroundings of the classical architecture and inspiring art.
Sounds like a church. Churches have art.
Some have mummies. You ought to think about adding mummies if you're going to have weddings.
Once I count all the children, do I get a prize?
Do you have baptisms too, or just weddings? I'd love to submerse myself in the art.
Oh, that's a good one.
I thought so too. We often have weddings. There are no mummies. Do not count the children. Please, no more questions. But isn't the point of art to provoke questions, to inspire inquiry, to form the other half of a conversation across time?
No. Just look at the paintings. I'll tell you what it is and what the artist was saying, and you go, ooh, very interesting, or geez, my kid could do that. This is a tour. Please be considerate and hold your questions.
I feel a little oppressed.
I'm not counting anyone older than 14. Am I shooting myself in the foot?
Is that a Duchamp?
No, it's an exit sign. I like the sentiment, though. It says exit. Is it an order, an invitation? Is it ironic, since the sign itself provides no exit at all?
It's a sign.
What's this?
It's a door.
I like it.
Please, if you don't want a guided tour, why did you sign up? I mainly wanted to be guided to the Sargent painting.
I like the Andy Griffith movie, No Time for Sargents. Is that a reference to the critical backlash faced by the painter due to his somewhat antiquated yet accomplished portrait painting style? A reaction to his technical genius? Jealousy, perhaps?
Like Bouguereau.
No time for Bouguereaus.
That's it. You're on your own.
I'm going to head to the Mummy Museum.
I'll meet you there after I check out this Sargent painting.
I'm going to lose myself in this Rothko. To me, the colors form a sort of visual musical chord. The harmony, the dissonance. 13, 14, 15.
I'm totally getting this prize.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you, as we participate in a conversation over time, as you become the heir to the worthless but perhaps interesting estate of a lunatic radio performer's soul, inheriting all the confusion and fear and joy and nonsense that one accumulates in life. And you can keep it or try to sell it on the Antiques Roadshow of Ideas, where the worth is determined by the demand. And yet this show demands nothing.
Do you have your ticket? It's free!
Oh, my friend, it's so great to take you places. You are my portable friends. I love things that are portable, like those old bars they used to have in the 40s, a little suitcase that you had your own liquor bar in it, little cups and everything, stirrers, in case you were trapped somewhere and say, I must have a cocktail. I'm glad I have this little cocktail suitcase full of my friends. I can just pull you out like you're lined up like cups. Look at you. Which one is the stirrer? Today, we are going to go to a museum. I love museums. You know that. I'm a big fan of art. No, I am not an art expert. It's okay to be a fan of something and not be an expert. I'm like that with lots of things. Jazz, I'm not an expert. I'm a fan. Art, I'm not an expert. I'm a fan. and say, well, how can you not know something about something and yet like it? Well, you don't have to be a neurologist to know that it feels good to have someone rub powder on your bottom. I'm telling you, a lot of it is just my heart. My heart knows, oh, look at this painting. And I tell you what, if you open up your mind and just pay attention to something, sometimes you can learn things if you don't approach an idea with a preconception. So we're going to go to a museum today, mausoleum. They sound familiar or similar, don't they? Well, they both do sound familiar. That's funny. I didn't mean to say familiar. I meant to say similar, but I said familiar because it's true. And sometimes the truth just falls out of my mouth like rotten teeth. Mausoleum does sound like museum. And I wonder, there are similar in some ways and different in others. I don't believe there is a mausoleum shop, but there could be. You could go there and you could get little pendant with a coffin on it or something. Say, that sounds very macabre. Well, I don't know about that, but I do know that my grandmother's maiden name was Macabre. She was Irish, but it was pronounced Laughlin. No, that's not true. She was a Muldoon, which means admirer of mummies in the original Irish language of Irish. Oh, it's so good to be with you. I hope you're learning something, but not from me, because I have nothing to teach you. All I'm here to do is just show you my feelings. I'm a feeling flasher. That's what I am. It's like I'm wearing a trench coat, and this is a very old-fashioned way of exposing oneself. And I open it up, and there is my nude body. No, it's my soul. And you just see, now, if my body had already begun to rot, it's not obscene. If I was a mummy or I was a skeleton, you just say, oh, look at that interesting skeleton. What's in its rib cage? It looks like a TV monitor. And what's on the monitor? It's a little introductory film before you go into the exhibit with a narrator with a fake British accent saying, please respect the exhibits, like that. I have that put in and say, oh, it's like a dead Teletubby. Oh, let's not even joke. My friends, it is so good to go to museums and with somebody, because sharing it is even better than experiencing it alone. It's like lunch or something. Say, oh, you're having a really good sandwich, and maybe it even has sliced hard-boiled eggs on it, which is exquisite. And you say, I wish I had someone to turn to and say, these eggs, like that. But when you're alone, you can't do that. Being alone is great, and I do love it. And sometimes it's just wonderful to stare at the walls of the interior of my head and say, boy, I wish there was more angles here, because it does a funny thing with the sound. Or I wish I could hang a painting on a curved surface. Perhaps I shall paint a mural. This reminds me, I went to two museums in Cincinnati this weekend. The Art Museum, which looks like a temple. You know, a lot of them do look like classical Greek temples or something like that. Not like Temple Israel or something, not like a Jewish temple. Well, maybe that too. It's funny how architecture doesn't always fit the thing. But, you know, the steps come up, you say, I'm going to go in and see the gods. And it turns out the gods are just little things, little pictures. Isn't that funny? And the other museum is the Museum Center in Cincinnati, which is in an old train station. Kind of an Art Deco train station, which is a magnificent place with a huge 100-foot ceiling, a big dome, and on the wall is this large mural. And I can't exactly remember who did it. It's this beautiful, colorful, homoerotic mural. A guy, Pierre something, he was the son of another famous artist. Oh, you're learning nothing from me. You can search it now on the internet, though. I don't even need to say anything. In fact, I'm just going to stop talking, and you go ahead and Google everything that I might have said. But it's a beautiful thing. It's a train station. There's got to be something poetic about seeing dead bodies in a train station. How 20s, right? I'm sure that happened a lot. Say, sir, wake up, we're here. I'm sure that does happen when people travel. Sometimes it's their last trip. I've done that, talking to someone on a bus, and you go, oh, my word, they're deceased. I wonder where in the conversation they died. And I wonder if I had anything to do with it. They said, you know what? I'm just going to, like a Zen monk, I think I'm going to go ahead and check out right now before this man bores me to death. I'd rather do it myself. But I'm going to start with the art museum because that's where I began. I said, I'm going to go to Cincinnati, this wonderful the Queen City, they call it, because that's where they make Little Kings. And I said, I'm going to go there and see to the big city, because I'm in Kentucky, in a not the big city. And we have two big cities, Louisville, where Thomas Merton went to have affairs, and Cincinnati, which is has a history. I wish I knew more about it besides the chili. Everybody goes, oh, Cincinnati chili. I say, yes. That's all I know, too. I know it's named after Cincinnatus, who I named going back in time. I went back in time, and they said, what should we name this child? And I said, you should name him after the American city, Cincinnati. That's a paradox, isn't it? I've created lots of them for time traveling. I've done nothing but mess up the universe was very ordered and neat before I got in it with my little time machine. It's not little at all. It's huge. It's actually larger than the Earth itself. How's that possible? Well, if you're going to set everything back in time, you can't do it with one little box. It's not enough to take yourself back in time. You got to take everything with you. And to do that, you must have a very large time machine. Technically, it is not a machine because there are no working or moving parts. How about that? You're learning so much. I feel like I'm taking up a lot of your space in your museum of your head with just scribbles and things that don't mean anything. Say, there could be a masterpiece on this wall. And look, what is Hardy putting on it? He just jotted something down on a paper. Oh, anything can be art. And yet not. So I'm going to try to tell you what my experience was. Share it with you. Sharing is an interesting word because I'm going to share my wealth, or you could say also I'm going to share this bacteria that has infected my brain, or I'm going to see you. That is also sharing. So I went to this art museum with the idea of seeing a particular painting because I like to research the museum I'm going to before I get there. Same when I'm coming to your home. Say, oh, come over for dinner, Hardy. I do a quick search of you. To see, oh man, I want to get the layout. I wish the Google Map had an interior one so I could, it does with some famous buildings, but I wish at every home I could just walk through it. So I do not want to ask where the bathroom is. I want to know where it is first because how many times I've peed in your closet? I don't want to do, and you say, really? Oh, I'm not going to name any names, but I don't want to go through that embarrassment again. And I know it's called a water closet. It is now. That's what we call it, the water closet. No one goes in there anymore because of you, Hardy. It's a walk-in closet. WC, same initials. You can see how I get that confused. There's washer-dryer hookups in here. But I digress. So I went and I did a little research first. I said, now what paintings do they have at this museum that I'd be interested in? Because as you know, I'm an art snob, and some things I do not want to bother with. Actually, a lot of the old, some of the old Dreyer paintings, just a bunch of, people sitting around or something. Some of them don't move me the way others do. So I do have taste, I'm sorry to say. And that's okay. That's all right. As long as you don't shut yourself off to something. I've set myself in front of paintings, and I've tried to appreciate them. Much like people say, oh, I'm trying. I'm desperately hearing you out, but you're dropping all sorts of hints here that maybe I have nothing to learn from you. Probably the racism. There are certain people. I try to love everyone, but if you're hateful or bigoted or something, it's very difficult, frankly. Are some paintings hateful and bigoted? I don't know. Are some artists? Yes. Can you tell by what they painted? Not necessarily. Should you judge a work by the artist? I don't know. Boy, that's a long conversation. The Wagner paradox. I don't know. It's hard to say. Say, can a reprehensible person make something beautiful? Perhaps. I mean, we do it all the time with human beings. don't we? I mean, an awful person can have a wonderful little baby. And let's say that baby's raised by somebody else, or someone becomes a good person. Same, is it the same thing? Hard to say. Hard to say. Say, I'm not going to like you because your mother's awful.
My mother is so awful.
Charles Nelson Reilly used to say that. My mother's an awful person. He loved her, but he realized that she was abrasive and everything. Now, would you not like Charles Nelson Reilly just because his mother was obnoxious? Indeed. That's a good argument. I'm going to use that for everything. Just call it the Charles Nelson Reilly's mother argument. This is how I'm going to get academic credentials. I'm just going to name things. People go, that is wonderfully named. What a provocative name. Thank you, my sir. No one says my sir. Sometimes I try to be pretentious. My ignorance just comes spilling out there. You see it, don't you? I expose myself. Again, you say that a lot, exposing yourself. Yes, because a lot of times by speaking the way I do, as often as I do, I feel like I'm revealing things inadvertently. I cannot control everything that is revealed when I speak. When I mispronounce something, I can pretend that I'm pretending. I can say, oh yes, I meant to misspeak like that. But in reality, it's probably, I'm just ignorant. And I say, some things you say sound so smart. Hardy, how could you not know how to pronounce that word? Oh, I tell you, we're all contradictions like that, aren't we? See, one minute, that's why it's so, just let down your defenses. Don't care. I mean, if you really try to maintain some kind of pretense and everything, you're going to exhaust yourself because we all got some sort of idiot side to us. We're not completely finished. You know how they say that in art? So is that like a sculpture? Is it go, oh, look at all the way around it. It's got finish. Even the back of it's done and everything. We are not. We're more like canvases. So look at the front of that is beautiful. And you turn it around. Oh, it's all stained. What is that brown stain on the back? We all have some kind of brown stain on the back of us. And are we responsible for that? Oh, it's part of being human. And you can see the bones of the canvas. You can see the wood that's holding it together if you look at the back. And we're going to look at all angles of that today because we're going into a museum together. And the painting that I wanted to see was a painting called Italian Girl, or sometimes Venetian Girl. Venetian Girl with Fan, and it's not a fan, by John Singer Sargent, who wasn't a sergeant. Who's an American painter who didn't live in America. Oh, all these contradictions. But I wanted to see this beautiful painting because I like his work. What do you like about his work? I like his work. There's a certain immediacy to it. He did not, in the conventional style, he didn't sort of sketch out the painting. He drew with paint. So it has this great vibrancy. The brush, you can see the brush strokes. You stand back and you go, wow, that's a realistic looking painting. And you go up and you see some thick mark of paint. And you say, wow, look at that. You can sort of see where he was moving his brush. I love to do that. I can feel like I'm in the presence of somebody. And so I really wanted to see this. And she's a beautiful girl. I have a little weakness there. Hey, I'm only a type of human. And I have a weakness for beauty. Oh, beautiful people. Oh, it's not just a sexual thing. I like the beauty of the human form. Oh, comes in all sorts of shapes and sizes and everything like that. And it transcends just your preference. You say, that's a beautiful body is a beautiful body. And there's something that jumps out at you in art because it's getting interpreted for you by somebody who's very good. So I want to go see this sergeant. Again, every time I say sergeant, I giggle because I see... Unfortunately, the sergeant I see is Sergeant Carter from Gomer Pyle. Like that. You know, I don't see other... I was never in the Army, so I don't see... Or the Marines, so I don't see my own Master Sergeant. My Master Sergeant is John Singer Sergeant. And so that was the Army I was in. Our Army. Art me. A-R-T-M-Y. I'm starting that. The U.S. Art Me. Are you going to join? Let's join up. We all can be officers, and we're all privates, aren't we? In the sense that you are kind of a
a bit of a private sometime. You know what I mean? I meant genitals. So listen, I went in this museum and immediately become overwhelmed because you turn to your right or left and there's beauty. Right away. There'll be a picture, a portrait or something, or a vase. In this case, in Cincinnati, Rookwood. That's like, I've talked about Wedgwood before. This is Rookwood. It's a pottery. And, you know, say, oh, pottery, it doesn't do it for me. But, boy, you look at it for a while, and it would. I tell you, a beautiful thing is a beautiful thing. So I was like, man, I got to get to the sergeant. I got to see this painting. And so, but I looked all around at other things. I looked at some Picassos. I looked at some Bouguereau. I looked at other paintings by other people. And I really started to fill up. And then I came upon a painting by Motherwell. And I'm going to make no jokes about that. Isn't it interesting to have the word mother and well in your name? It's evocative. Well, the painting was even more evocative to me because it was just it seemed like a black square on like a brown, reddy brown kind of background, or kind of a yellowy reddy brown. The blues man. But anyway, so I saw this and I became overwhelmed. Now, I don't know if it was this specific painting or whether I got this from looking at other paintings. I have a bit of what they call Stendhal syndrome, where I get very emotional in the face of beauty sometimes. I don't know what it is. I get a little bit worked up or something. And so I saw this painting, which is just like a black square on another color background. But there's so much to it that I started to cry a bit, and it's very embarrassing. That's beautiful, Hardy. No, it's ridiculous, because it's some kind of physical response I have to too much stimulus. It isn't anything particularly beautiful. It's just something to be completely ashamed of. So I regained my senses, and I moved on, and I finally found the sergeant painting of this woman. Now, I'm not going to give you any background to it. I'm not going to tell you I time traveled to 1882 when it was painted or something. I'm just going to tell you the experience I had standing in front of it. First of all, it's enormous. It's bigger than life. So she was taller than me. Oh, it was like Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. And she's coming out to this large Venetian woman, going to come out and assault me with her beauty. And she was standing in this dress with this red shawl on it. And I just stood there and looked at it, and I thought, I'm going to look at every inch of this painting. I'm just going to look at it as if I were painting it, and I was standing there and making all these brush strokes. And I just started to look at it as if those brush strokes, to me, started looking like footprints. You know, like you were watching, you were looking at something where somebody had been. Like Sargent was right there painting it. He was alive. Oh, he's long dead. He died in the 20s. But he was alive again, and so was the model, and I'm sure she's long dead. I hope so, because she'd be a zillion million years old. That is not good math. But she would certainly be longer than the average lifespan of the person. And I looked at this painting, and it is true. Some of these are just one stroke of the brush there. And I followed it with my eyes. I said, I can see him stroking that right there. As he looked at that dress and he said, what is that color? What is that thing? And he mixed it on his palette and jam right there. And all of a sudden, he's communicating with me. Alive as can be, no longer dead. Neither model nor person. Now, there's nothing else like art that does that. Music does that too. You say, oh, I'm listening to Clifford Brown, and I know he died in a traffic accident years and years ago with Richie Powell in Bedford, Pennsylvania. And he's been gone a very long time, longer than I am old. And yet he is totally alive when I'm hearing his trumpet playing. Totally alive. He's talking to me. It's happening now. I feel it. Some of his soul going into my head. It doesn't seem dead. It doesn't seem like some remains or something. It seems current. It's a moment. And the only way I experience life, I don't know about you, is these moments. Everything else becomes memory. Everything else becomes remains. And I just have this second. I don't even know what it is. And here I am. I'm giving it to you, too. Oh, I could be dead when you're listening to this. I don't know when you're listening to this, and I don't know when I'll die. So it seems like I'm alive and I'm speaking right to you. But boy, I could be long gone as well because I've listened to the words, the voices of people who aren't with us anymore. But their ideas seem current. Every time I pick up a book, if I read the autobiography of Chateaubriand, he's alive. He is alive lying about meeting George Washington. He's no longer in the grave, even though the book is ironically called Memoirs Out of the Tomb. But he's not in the tomb. He's lying. He's lying. He's walking right here hand in hand with me. And he's much considerably shorter than I am. Oh, bless his little heart. So I stared at that Sergeant Payne for, I think, a long time. I left my overcoat and my hat on because I didn't want to carry him around. So I think I was becoming a little dizzy, you know, as I got warm. And my head started to swim a bit. And I was just overwhelmed with all the life. I burn out in museums. After a couple galleries, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. It's too much. It's like a lot of people talking to you at once. It'd be like hearing a lot of people's life stories or something. It'd be like a priest hearing confession, one after another. After about six or seven, you go, I just can't take it anymore. If you're a thoughtful person, your brain becomes full. You say, I got to go digest this. It's like you've taken a lot of food in your mouth or your stomach. You say, I can't get one more bacon burger into me. Even though they're sliders and they're diminutive, I still am full. I must go suck out the nutrients out of this art slider. And then I must get rid of what I don't need in the form of the waste. Now, what is art waste? I don't know. I don't know. Those are all the paintings you don't like or something. So I stared at this for a while, and then I went on my way. And then I went to another museum. I went to that train station museum where they had a traveling exhibit called Mummies of the Word, I guess. What are mummies of the word? That's what I'm doing right now. Word mummies. They're popping out of my mouth. The remains of my thoughts. My thoughts are perfect and full. My thoughts contain some sort of life. But the minute I make them into a word, they seem limited. They seem finite. They seem like they will someday die. So I went to this mummy exhibit, even though I have mixed feelings about human remains being put on display for others to see. But I felt this was different because there was a certain reverence to it. There was no, they were not posed throwing frisbees or anything undignified. They laid often in repose. And I felt that it was all right, that there was enough dignity to it. Although this is, again, debatable. Not everything I do is morally, ethically correct. But I wanted to see it. I needed to satisfy my curiosity. And it wasn't mere curiosity. Every time I have experience like this, I really, really hope to gain something from it. And not just be entertained. I feel like my job every week is to solve a sort of poetic math problem. I will take two experiences and I will try to figure out exactly how they go together. Why I was led to do both things. What I could possibly say to you to convey some sort of new thought that maybe I could have for you. We can't be in all places at once, right? When I listen to your stories, I'm not going to be able to travel all over the world. So I want to hear about, what did you do when you're in Poland? What did you do when you're in Nigeria? Tell me about the time you're in the army. I want to hear it because I can't physically be there and do it. So I do need you to experience it, make some sense out of it, and then tell me about it. And I feel like that's my, I won't call it a job, but it's not really a job. I feel like that's my purpose, is to do this. So I thought, well, I'm going to put together mummies and art and see what happens. Because instead of looking at paintings, I'm going to go look at human remains. I'm going to go look at something that never should have been preserved. something finite.
Like the paintings.
Paintings won't last forever. Gosh, they're on fabric. They're on canvas, a lot of them. Some of them are on paper. Paper doesn't last forever. So we're still seeing sort of a mummy, aren't we? We're seeing somebody's taken something and put it on something finite. It's going to deteriorate. So I got to grab on to that idea before it disappears. So I thought I'm going to have that with a mummy, perhaps. And I went and I looked at these mummies. The exhibit started with a film. Welcome. It sounded a little like the Haunted House. I didn't like that. Welcome to Mummies of the World. And the guy had a little bit of an affected accent. I think it would have been better to say, hey, y'all, we're going to look at some people. These are dead people. But they did point out that these people had family and friends and everything. Now, the fact that they had friends, I think that's stretching it. Who knows whether they had friends or not. But they certainly had family. And they certainly had people who knew them. They certainly did things. They ate and they pooped and they walked. Some of them didn't walk. Some of them were children. Some of them were little tiny babies, in fact. So the exhibit opened with two bodies laying in glass coffins as if they were Lenin or someone else in a glass coffin. Usually always communists for some reason. I don't know why that, but I don't think these were. In fact, they weren't. They were Germans from the 17th century who lived during the 30 Years' War, a brutal conflict of religion and nations. And they were a baron and a baroness, though not married. So I looked at the baroness first, and there she lay. The linen on her legs was still preserved, but the wool clothing had deteriorated. They had a cloth laid across her nether regions to lend some dignity to her in death. She was a twisted person suffering from scoliosis, probably the result of starvation as a child. The hair netting of her wig could still be visible because people back then would cut off all their hair because it was probably loaded with all sorts of nasty things, matted from not being washed and full of bugs and everything. So they'd crop it down real low and wear a wig, and you could still see the hair netting there. Oh, you could look at her hands. The skin was still mostly on her. She wasn't just bone. She was a true mummy. These were found in a family crypt of a castle. Someone found them not very long ago and noticed that all these remains had been preserved somehow, not intentionally like Egyptian mummies, but just accidental mummies. Perhaps it was the cool of the crypt. It was they didn't rot away like they normally would. They just sort of dried out and like something in your freezer. Say, what is this piece of meat? It still looks like a hamburger. It hasn't rotted. It hasn't putrefied. And there she lay, and I guess she died at about 35 years of age. It was a terrible time, very, very cold in Europe, lots of famine, lots of disease. And so she lived during harsh times and not for very long. She lived 35 years, and now her corpse was older than her body ever was. The shell went on longer than the body ever did, and longer than any body is meant to. Usually they break down, but this was somehow preserved by the wood and the cold of the crypt. She lay next to the baron, who at 5'10 was a giant for the time. Perfect teeth he had, completely healthy.
But he was dead.
Long dead. They don't know how he died. He was so healthy. Perhaps he got the flu. Flu will get you. Flu will get you. And he lay there in his knee-high leather boots because he was a mercenary. He fought, and yet he had no injuries, no broken bones. Oh, what a man the baron was! His teeth were perfect, perfectly straight, perfectly white. He wasn't missing any of them. The docent said that his theory is that the baron drank beer, and beer is made from boiled water, and so he didn't ingest any of the bacteria and nasty and parasites that everybody else was drinking. Oh, yeah, you're thinking, oh, I drink beer, I'm pretty healthy. Exactly. Oh, drink your beer, especially if you're living in the 1600s in Germany. And there the baron lay. Oh, what a man. His lips were all pulled back because he got the corpse bloat because he died in the summer. If you die in hot weather, your corpse bloats up. Your lips peel back like that. Baroness didn't have that, so they said she died in the cold. And I just stared at him for a while. And I kind of talked to him in my head. Hey, Baron. Baron. Hey, Baron. And guess what I felt? Nothing. I felt nothing. It wasn't like looking at a painting at all. It wasn't like looking at a live, of a painting of a live person. And looking at the contours of their skin and feeling that life. And here I am looking at the real thing, and yet nothing. Painting? Something. Corpse? Nothing. It made me feel empty. Emptier than I normally. It felt like it was sucking something out of me, in fact. Like I was trying to fill it in with life. There was absolutely nothing there. I enjoyed hearing about the history of it all, but to me, it just wasn't a person. I just couldn't imagine it, animate it. I couldn't add the features back to it and see what it looked like in life. It just seemed pointless to me. It just seemed gone. And as I moved on through the exhibit and looked at these other corpses, some of them very recent, a Hungarian family from the early 19th century, not very long at all. They were found in the crypt of a church, a forgotten crypt. Somebody was working on it and knocked through a hole in the wall, discovered that it was only one layer of bricks, and found this secret crypt with stacked coffins. And when they took them, the perfectly preserved wooden coffins, and when they took them out, the people in them hadn't rotted very much. More unintentional mummies. All of these had died of tuberculosis, more or less. They were ordinary people. And I looked at them, a father, a mother, and a little baby, all laying there in repose, all dressed in period costume. They had dressed them in a recreation of what they were found in. And they lay there with their hands across their chest. And again, I felt nothing. I felt only kind of gloom. I only felt the time, the oppressiveness of time, saying, oh, how short it is. 35 years some of them got, 40 years. What is this? What can we do in that time? What else did they... Let me see something they made. Let me see something they wrote. I can't just look at their body here. It's telling me nothing. I see nothing. So, oh, Hardy, you're not looking close enough. Bodies can tell very many stories. Not as many stories as stories can tell. Stories tell more stories than dead bodies tell stories. Now, you can say that, but I tell you what. It tells us something about us, but it might not tell us any about that person. Maybe just the particulars of how they lived. This man was a carpenter. Doesn't tell me nothing. I know lots of carpenters. You know what some of them are? Musicians. Artists. They do the carpentry, they do the house painting, or they do the plastering to pay the bills. But then when they get home, they make art and they pass on ideas and they have poetic thoughts. Where are they? Where are they? Let me see this man's poetry. Let me see his music. Where's the poetry of his conversation and interaction with others? That's what I want to see. This is telling me nothing. Oh, all I saw were shells. I didn't see like I did in the museum. The idea of beauty, untethered from the body, preserved but alone, merely an echo, but more powerful than the human body, transcending time. Bringing me a new, fresh moment. Not me looking down the, looking at this decay. And these mummies won't last forever. Every mummy that they dig up starts to rot again. And eventually it'll be crumble and turn to dust. We're just looking at very slow decay. Not non-decay. Is that a word? You're not looking at something permanently preserved, in other words. Even stone eventually goes away, doesn't it? But I lingered in this exhibit, looking at these heads, looking at, there was mummy parts. Now, people used to go to Egypt and get souvenirs, and they would rip up mummies, and they'd take them apart. They'd cut off the heads and the hands and sell them to tourists. So here, buy a mummy hand. Oh, that's a beautiful mummy hand. They put fake rings on them, said mummy hand with ring. How much is the mummy hand without the ring? So, and I'd look at that hand, and I would think, that is a person. I wonder what that hand did. I wonder what that hand made, who that hand touched. Was it a child? Was it a woman? It's an awfully small hand. Was it a rich person? Was it a poor person? Whose hand was that? And you know what? That was me. That was me doing the thinking. That hand wasn't speaking to me. That was my own mind. That was my hand. That's my hand laying there. And me looking back at it saying, what are my live hands going to do before they're dead? Oh, one of these coffins that they found the Hungarians in had skulls painted on the side. And on the side was written that familiar phrase, memento mori. Memento mori, my friend, memento mori, my friend. Think about it, you're gonna die. You're gonna die, you're gonna die. Oh, my dying song is joyous. Oh, my dying song has life. My dying song means clapping my hands like a skeleton with meat on it. Oh, ah, I wanted to live. I saw all those things there say, I gotta live life right now. I gotta be a painting. I gotta show people the strokes of my paint going down there. I gotta show you everything that I did in my life so you can look at it and it can resonate throughout the ages so it can give you a moment. So it can add to your memories. So it can bring joy in the face of this horrible fate. So it wouldn't be bad to be a mummy. You don't get to be a mummy. That's the thing. You're dead. So, oh, I want to be a mummy. You're not the mummy. You will not be laying there looking up at people looking at you going, oh, look at his teeth. That won't happen. All right? You're you right now. You are trapped in moments. We are prisoners of moments. You can't go in the past. You can't go in the future. You got to get you some sort of creature that's stuck in time. Something happened in the universe. And all you got this moment. What am I going to do with it? I feel sick to my stomach. I got a headache or something. What am I going to do with it? Hardly, I can't have joy. I don't feel good. I hear you. Oh, bless you. I hear you. I'll be with you. Maybe we can put our moments together and something good will happen. Maybe I can use these hands to heal you. That's what I'll do. I'll go to medical school and I'll learn some knowledge and I'll use these hands to heal you. Some of those bodies in there were parts that were preserved for doctors to study medical, to study the anatomy so that they could heal people. Those doctors who made them also dead. The people that were studying to be healed, dead. It's for the living. That healing's for the living. Just to add another moment on top of that. Collect these moments. Oh, we need each other. Oh, human beings, creators of life, destroyers of life, we need you. The army of the moments, the army of the living, we need you to come together and stop your destruction and pay attention and take in as much as you can. Oh, go to museums all the time. Look at art. Create art. I was having lunch the other day with a biologist. I like to do that because I have them look at my food. Say, do you think anything's in this? I tend to want to associate with people who know more than I do, which is everybody. Everybody knows more about something than I do. I find that, and that's very exciting. I can't imagine being somebody so smarty pants that there's nobody who could teach you anything. How depressing that would be. So, yes, I go to classes and I know everything. You don't get excited. You don't get the Stendhal syndrome like I do. You don't start weeping because you see something so beautiful. You say, I couldn't possibly make that. Oh, if I could only communicate a thought like that with two colors of paint. Oh. With music, I feel like that too. If I could only communicate that, which is pitch, which is duration of a note. And all of a sudden, the feeling goes in from that person long ago into me. Magical.
So I was having lunch with this person, and they were talking about stuff. Now, when I hear anything from anybody else, whether it's related to something I'm thinking about or not, I try to stick it onto a problem I'm working on. And so I heard her say, enabling replicative immortality. And what she was talking about was cancer. But I didn't hear nothing about cancer. All I was hearing about was art. So when she said cells lose their tendency to go into senescence, I thought, oh, a lot of us lose our tendency to grow old. A lot of corpses don't want to rot and grow old. They just linger. And she goes, and when cells lose their tendency to go into senescence, they become monsters. Indeed, all these mummies had become monsters. They were no longer people. We were preserving them and looking at the absolute minimum of being a person, and that's this crusty, nasty body, which is crusty and nasty and leathery and bony and all the stuff that owls cough up. That's basically what we were looking at. And when they say remains, man, they mean remains. It's just what remains. All the good stuff is gone, I guarantee you. So I love, I'm fascinated with it. I am too. I'm fascinated with my own mortality. I love looking at it. I love the macabre. I love being creeped out like that. But I'm telling you, it's not what gives me the real joy. Not these monsters. And so I thought about that. She's talking about genomic instability. But all I could hear was things about art with truths, you know? I don't know what, every time a cell divides, its telomere gets shorter. And I thought, every time I speak, my telomere gets shorter. I age, I go into senescence, and I don't want to be immortal because that immortality, my quest for immortality will kill us all. You know, the only immortality is our ideas. It's what I'm giving you now. You say, well, you don't get to experience it. Don't I? No. Don't I? No. Well, maybe I do. No, you don't. Well, perhaps. No. Well, what good? No. What do I get then? The moment. Well, what do I get in the moment? You get the feeling of immortality. How's that true? Well, it feels like forever a little bit. You can make it feel like forever, that moment. How? Listen to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White, and I will make an hour seem like forever. It is seeming very long, isn't it? Oh, my goodness. Time is, as we know, is relative. You know, it moves faster depending on what brand of spaceship you're on. So I'm on the go to a museum spaceship. I'm on the go to a traveling exhibit spaceship. I'm on meet as many people as I can. You know, it's difficult for me to meet live people. I think that's why I like art, because I'm so shy. I think because I'm so self-conscious. I'm so messed up. When I meet people, I'm just, not going to like me. I'm going to say something. I'm going to reveal something about myself. That's why I have to do it on the radio. So it doesn't seem right. Oh, yeah, don't be like me. Seriously. I might accidentally say things that are wise or interesting or informative. But don't be me. Oh, don't be me. I miss so much. I miss so much because of my fears. I miss so much because of my fear that I'm going to be rejected. I miss so much because I cannot get over my mistakes very easily. I miss so much. I miss so much because I can't get beyond this. I can't get beyond the sense that I'm the center of things. Oh, it's like a child, narcissistic like a child. Wish I could get over it. I wish I could just let myself go like that. Oh, but I'm so attached to it. I'm working on it every day, though. I want to be my... I try to look people in the eye, but I get lost in their gaze. And I just stare. And I start to wonder. And that's no good. That's not the way people interact. Say, you're crazy. I'm moving on. Oh, no. I'm wrong and been rejected. That's how I feel all the time. So I like to stare in the eyes of portraits. And I can look at that face as long as I want. And nobody will be creeped out by me staring at their face. If I was to stare at your face for as long as I wanted to, you would become massively uncomfortable. I guarantee it. I guarantee it. But I'm so curious. I'm so curious to know what's going on in the head and the minds of others. I think that's why I just dump my brain like this to you.
I'm giving you this. This is my Italian girl with a fan. All these radio shows. I don't even remember what I put into them. I just dump everything into them. If I have a thought, I think something I think is funny, I say it. Then if I think something I think is sad, I say it next. I don't think, oh, you should say a bunch of funny things in a row. That's what people like. Don't say something serious or sad right after you say something funny. They're not going to like that. Oh, dear. That's why it's good you're not here. That's why it's good that we have this separation over time. That's why it's good I'm already dead. Oh, I'm virtually already gone. I am a mummy Hardy speaking to you from the grave. Out of the grave. See, I died in the summer, so I have no lips. Oh, there's my winter self, my winter mummy self with the lips and everything intact. My ribs didn't break because my chest didn't blow open. Oh, that's so nice. I hope that doesn't happen to me, although it won't be me, will it? This is me. I've taken myself and I put myself right there into the shows. How about that? All my thoughts, all my feelings, all the things I thought when I saw those mummies, this child mummies. And you know what I thought when I saw the child mummies? I thought, somebody lost their baby. That can't be easy. Any time, losing a child. Say, have you ever lost a child, Hardy? You haven't. Well, I'm a fictional radio character, so who knows what happened to me exactly. But I do have a heart, don't I? I do know what pain is, don't I? I do know what love is, don't I? And so do you. And so, let things speak to you. Oh my goodness, open your eyes. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Oh, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to laugh 1 minute and clap your hands. Don't be afraid of joy. You need that joy. Because then something else is going to be right around the corner, sadness and pain. And then there's no better antidote. Antidote and anecdote sound similar because they do similar things, don't they? I tell you a story and it can take your mind off of that stomach ache. It take your mind off that chronic pain. Who knows what's going on in others' lives? That's why it's good. I'll serve you this up in spite of what's going on. I hope that you found it in some way useful. Yes, Hardy, I'm going to use it to line the cage of my bird. You mean your bird cage? Yes. What interesting syntax you have. Because I was going to say something other than bird. All right, you do that then. You line your bird cage with it. That's all right. If you want to use my shows just to clean up your pet's poop, I have no problem with that. I don't know how that would be done since they're mostly oral. To be heard in the ear. But if you find a way to do it, somebody I saw on the internet used sound to put out a fire. Perhaps you can use the sound of my voice to put out a fire. I hear from people all the time say, oh, you kept me company. At the show, a live show I did in New Jersey, I don't do them very often because they make me absolute nervous wreck. Because, oh, so many beautiful people there, I don't want to let them down, you know? I'd see seeing disappointment on faces. I'm not quite there yet. I have to open the show with something over my head because if I just look at people directly, I won't be able to do it. I got to put a mask on. You know, that's just me. But people come up to me afterwards and somebody said to me, you helped me get to sleep with your words. And then someone right next to them said, you helped keep me awake with your words on a car trip. Same words. Isn't that interesting? I say, man, if it can be at all helpful. That's what I feel like if my body was going to do it, I'm going to leave my body to architecture. Because I'd like to use my mouth as a cup holder or something. A lot of people leave it to science. I want you to use it as a piece of furniture. So, look, I'm going to make something out of a really grotesque chair out of Hardy. I want him to have some practical purpose. Say, oh, we got 5 people over for dinner. We got 4 chairs. Go get the twisted Hardy corpse chair. Oh, my word, what is that? Well, Hardy has donated himself to Bauhaus or something. So he said, turn me into a human Barcelona chair. So we have. And we just had to rearrange some things, take some of his ribs and put them in his lap. But other than that, it's him. Oh, but is it him or is this me? Don't know. Haven't quite figured it out. If I've brought you joy, take that joy, make some preserve out of it, make jelly out of it. How do you do it? Get a jar, get a box made of wood, get a box made of canvas, get a box made of paper, and put your joy in it. That's what a painting is. That's what a dress is. That's what a dress by Rudy Gernreich is. They had that on exhibit there. I looked at his dresses and I felt alive. I felt Rudy Gernreich right with me, being playful. The complete total look, head to toe. All my ideas for how to accent a person's beauty. I want you to wear the monokini of love and let the breasts of your inner soul be exposed so people can see the source of life right there on you. Hide nothing. Be brave. I'm being brave. Every day I'm getting more brave. Every day I'm conquering my fears. Every day I'm dealing with things better. Every day I'm making my moments longer. All we have is an instant. Memories fade. I know. I've seen it. I've seen it in people I love. I've seen their memories go away. I've seen them vanish. And the only thing that consoles me is that somehow moments are eternal. And that is, it's just an illusion that they go away. That in fact, the instants last forever. And that the souls in those mummies are still somehow contained in the beautiful instants of their life. And when I see art, I see evidence of that. I look at a painting and I say, it's captured that. It's captured a feeling. It's captured a moment. And it's saying it to me absolutely clearly. It's talking to me all over this barrier of time. It's erased it. There's no past or future. Look at it. It's erased it. It's two moments have joined up together. They found each other, like subatomic particles being attracted or something. The moments will all find each other, and all the moments will come together in beautiful unity. So make them count. Make them good. Don't worry about stuff, y'all. Don't worry about it. Put the worry and pain aside. Come on now. Open your hearts. It's okay. You're all right. You're all right the way you are. Gee, just let it go, all that self-torture, and have that joy in that moment. Put your hands together. Clap your mummy hands with me. Clap it. Say, I'm going to move this body while it's still movable. Even if I'm down to the only motion I can make is clapping my hands. I've seen elderly people lost everything they have, and they can still get that clap motion a little bit. So that's why I clap my hands all the time, to remind you what a moment is. Oh, bless you so much. You bless me. Everybody who's ever written me at HardyWhiteShow@yahoo.com. Anybody who's ever come up to me and shake my hand and everything. Oh, bless you. You don't know what you've done for me, what you've given to me. Oh, you have no idea the gift. And I hope I've given something a little bit back to you, too. You're listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, online at WFMU.org and 91.9 in blessed Rockland County, where people will be mummies in the future, but not now. Oh, lift up all your voices and make this life count or not. Thank you so much for listening to me, and I'll speak with you again next week. Welcome.
Understand Jesus. Awesome.